Tomorrow night at 7:30 at W.K. Kellogg Auditorium in Battle Creek, the Battle Creek Symphony teams up with Whatado Theater for a program called Don Juan. And here to talk about it are the director of programming of Whatado Theater, Terry Noel, as well as resident company actor Rachel Markley and conductor Ann Harrigan. Welcome, everybody.
Good morning.
Morning.
So, Anne, this is a project that I think you have put together in a really original, unique way with help from Whatado. Would you go into the backstory on this?
Well, this is something I've been inspired by some great orchestras who've been branching out and really doing different projects to engage audiences. The Chicago Symphony particularly has done some fantastic things, merging theater and music. And so what we're going to do is we have chosen Don Juan, Strauss's Don Juan, and in the first half of the concert, we are going to be partnering with Whatado Theater and kind of breaking it out. What was it like, you know, for Strauss? It was 1889 at the time. He was fairly young. He was in love, and he was kind of trying to make a name for himself. You know, he had a problem that he had a very popular last name, that of the Waltz King, and he didn't want to be the Waltz King. He wanted to be his own man, and he was trying to figure out how he was going to make that happen, and he was actually conducting Mozart's Don Giovanni opera at the time when he came up with the inspiration of doing his own rendition and creating a new kind of concept that he called a tone poem, you know, that hadn't been done a lot. Most people were doing symphonies at the time, but not unlike Hector Berlioz, in that he was in love with a woman and he wanted to make a name for himself and he wanted to impress the girl at the same time. And so, so what we've done is on the first half of the concert, we're going to be giving you a behind the scenes look through actors and musical excerpts of what Don Juan is all about. It's 18 minutes of the most brilliant music ever written, fiendishly difficult, as we all know. And it goes by so fast, it's kind of fun to kind of break it out. And also things that it was influenced by, things that it influenced, and some just tidbits about Strauss. And then on the second half, we will perform the entire Don Juan in its entirety without anything, just the music. And then after that, we're performing the Jedi Steps and finale from Star Wars, The Force Awakens. And we'll talk later about why that piece is on the program.
I am curious about that. So who are the characters? Is Richard Strauss a character?
Richard Strauss is the main event, yes. So Richard Strauss is, we have Richard Strauss. Of course, we have Don Juan.
Don Juan is a character.
Don Juan is a character, yes. And we have three leading ladies, they're just called. Don Juan, this particular poem, that there's many different treatments of Don Juan, and this was Nicolas Lienau. His poetry was more the search for the idealized woman as opposed to, you know, more carnal, if I can say. And so it was more romanticized. And so in this sense of being idealized, the women actually never speak. So, which is interesting because, in fact, Strauss was madly in love with a very strong woman named Pauline Maria de Anna. And so she is the only woman who speaks, and she is a very, very strong personality, and she is very strongly represented in the play and also in the music.
Terry, how and why was this a good fit for Whatado Theater?
Well, I really think that, especially in our community, we are always trying to, just like Anne, see how we can reach the community and impact them with the arts, because Battle Creek is an area that Kalamazoo has a ton of art opportunities, and so does Battle Creek, but Battle Creek sometimes doesn't always get the same publicity and recognition of those things. So, you know, when Anne and I were talking and talking about this collaboration, I thought it was a great idea to kind of combine what our community has to offer and take the piece that she wrote and kind of just make it into art and will be in a different space, and it will just kind of be a nice collaboration. And that's kind of where it went from, and just us talking, I guess. But I really thought that for me and the theater, I thought it was just a really great way to show what two great art programs can create.
Terry, tell me more about What A Do Theater. How big is this company, and how often do you perform?
What A Do Theater is located on West Dickman Road in Springfield, and it is a small theater. We are a 96-seat theater, and we are a professional theater company. Randy Wolf is our director. He's our artistic director, and he does 5 shows a year. We do youth programming as well out there, and we do a lot of different things out in the we're starting to try to branch out into the community, but
workshops and such.
Yep, we do workshops and different things like that. And I'm sorry, what else did you ask?
I think that how many shows per year? How large? How many people are involved in the
resident
the
company? Yeah. That's what I was going to talk to you about. So our resident company, I would say, is composed of about 30. About 30 people, and they are actors, they are tech, they are we are a theater that is a professional theater company, but we operate based off of all of us working together to keep the company going. So even though I may be on stage for a production, I'll be running the box office for another production, or I'll be doing the marketing for the other production, or some people come in and run the crew when they're not involved in the show. So we kind of all work as a team, which is a unique thing for a theater, because not always do you have actors on and off stage always running the things. Sometimes you hire out and do those things, but we are kind of this well-oiled machine with Randy Wolf at the lead of it, kind of showing us what to do and how to run it. And it's been very successful. We've been open, this is our 6th season. So
the people in the company, have most of them studied theater at the college level or something like that?
You want to take that?
This is Rachel Markley.
Yes, this is Rachel Markley.
Hi. I'd say it's a pretty good variety of things, actually. You have former teachers of high school range. Mm-hmm. You have people that have gone to college for this, people that spent a bit of time at college and left years and years ago. We have people that come on the stage that have taken time off 20 years or more and come back, and they love it. Mm-hmm. So we even have high school kids, and I think last year when we did Cheaper by the Dozen, our youngest actor was 5. So
it sounds like a very active theater group in Battle Creek. And you must have been impressed, or seen a production and thought, we should work together with the symphony.
Well, yes. I had this idea. I've had this idea. Actually, Megan Yankee and I, it was our dream to do a concept like this probably years ago. And I've been thinking about it for a long time. I actually did it last year in Billings, Montana with a different production, and it was so successful that I've got to do this in Battle Creek. And didn't know the theater world in Battle Creek as well as I should. And I said, well, this is a good opportunity. So I started doing some research. And so, yes, so I had the concept in mind. I knew what I wanted to do. And then I went to a production of What A Do Theater, sort of did a mini audition, if you would say. And I was really impressed. It was a production of Anne Frank. It was very, very moving, excellent, very honest acting, very skilled, and very professional. And it was a tiny theater, you know, so you're right there, and you really had a wonderful relationship with the actors. And so Terry and I kind of struck up a conversation, and she's been very patient, because one of the challenges with this is there had to be a script written. And the first part of the script was, you know, choosing, all right, what are the excerpts? You know, what are we going to play? Because this is a concert. It's musically driven.
And I'm so impressed that it's all done from scratch, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, don't be so impressed, because I finished it about 2 weeks ago. And so Terry is like, you know, my actors really need a script. So like, yes, I know. I'm trying. But it was very difficult for me. And I end up getting a lot of strength actually from Strauss's own writings. He was fairly prolific. There was some reviews of the work and the text, you know, that he used, the Nicholas Lienau text, the translation of that. And so when you come to the concert, in the end, it wasn't as hard as I made it, because Strauss wrote most of what is said. Some of it's pretty outrageous, I will say. There's this one line that he says that the orchestra, and he said this to the orchestra during the debut or another time when he's conducting, he felt they sounded lackluster. And so he asks to play as if they were newly engaged and all will be well. Now, bear in mind, Strauss was secretly engaged at the time to Pauline de Ahna, so he was definitely coming from a different point of view, and he ended up having a wonderful marriage to this woman for many, many years. So I think they died within a few months of each other. And so when he said this, he said it from the heart. He really wanted that kind of passion. My favorite Strauss line, you probably know it. There's a couple, actually. And one of them is, never look at the trombones. You'll only encourage them.
I didn't realize that was something he actually said. That's
yes,
funny.
Actually. Well, that's the funny thing with the script. Most of the really outrageous things that are in the script he wrote, and he wrote many other things. He had a lot of instructions for young conductors. He was very economical in his movements. And he really was very circumspect in his balance with the brass. He was understated. He was sort of an understated person, an understated conductor. And he thought if something, there's a line I think about it, saying if you think you've hit the limits of prestissimo, you know, which is very fast, then go faster.
So as the story unfolds, Strauss is conducting a performance of Don Giovanni. He's a famous conductor at this point.
He's an up and coming. He's an established conductor, I'd say. So.
And this is when he gets the idea to create the Don Juan tone poem.
Yes.
The program that you're conducting, you will conduct the Don Giovanni overture by Mozart.
Yes, I will. Yes. That.
So why don't we hear the piece and remind listeners that the concert is Saturday at 7:30 in W.K. Kellogg Auditorium. And Anne, you can tell us how to find further information.
Further information, give us a call at 269-963-1911. Patrick is right there to give you any information you want about the concert. We'll have a pre-concert discussion called Backstage Pass with Anders Dahlberg. We'll be interviewing Terry and some more information at 6:40, and the concert starts at 7:30 p.m. And there's also information available at battlecreeksymphony.org.
Let's hear the overture to Don Giovanni. We heard a recording of the overture to Don Giovanni by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. In that recording, it was Tafelmusik led by Bruno Weil. And I think I pulled that from the library, Anne Harrigan, because I know that you have studied historically informed performance.
Yes.
And sometimes you have your baton ready and you tell your musicians, we're going to try a few techniques that come from that period, you know.
Yes, I have a few Tafelmusik recordings. Excellent choice. So, back in the day, when I had I think more time, I used to do my own editions. You know, I'd take the music and I'd mark everything in the parts. And now I write scripts for Don Juan, and so it spent quite a bit of time in rehearsal, even last night, talking with the orchestra about how you have to make adaptations, you know, to really fit with how the instruments were built at that time, what the sensibility was. You know, you want Mozart to sound like Mozart and not like Strauss, you know, a very different style. So that's one of the things that's very important to me personally. And so thank you for picking that recording. It's an excellent one. And so we're starting out with Mozart's Don Giovanni, and it's sort of, we're showing a continuum of just how music can influence each other. And we talked about Richard Strauss, you know, wanting to make a name for himself, having a little bit of an aha moment, I think, when he was conducting Don Giovanni. And so then writing his own tone poem, which is, of course, very different than, you know, the symphonies that were being written. And what's interesting is that as Mozart influenced Strauss, Strauss had an incredible influence on one of the most famous composers of our day, who, of course, is John Williams. And when you listen to the Star Wars, the Jedi Stepson finale, particularly, even more so than his earlier music from the Star Wars The Force Awakens that was just written 2 years ago, you know, the music is brand new. And you can hear the horns, for example. Strauss, his father was a professional horn player, and he wrote his first horn concerto, I believe, at the age of 17. And he wrote one of his last pieces he wrote was a horn concerto, and some of the most brilliant writing for horn ever written. And so then if you listen to John Williams and you think about Star Wars and you think about the use of the horn and in the beautiful melodies in the hero's theme, and there's a big hero's theme in Don Juan, and it is, you can see a direct link. So here we have music that was written 2 years ago that was indirectly influenced by something that was written in 1700 by Mozart. And so it's just kind of this sharing of this culture and passion, you know. So,
okay. John Williams has been accused by people who maybe don't even know better of just flagrantly lifting, borrowing too closely from Tchaikovsky, from Richard Strauss, from all these composers that came before. You have conducted a substantial amount of his output, and from the score to the Cowboys and to Catch Me If You Can. What do you have to say to people who say he's just someone who borrows from other composers?
It's nonsense. It's utter nonsense. I've done a lot of his traditional works, as you said, like the, you know, Escapades, and he's definitely influenced, but it's his own sound. It's very distinctive, and Mozart borrowed all the time. Britain borrowed, Tchaikovsky borrowed, lifted folk tunes. They didn't mind. They gave it their own treatment. It's what we do. We reinterpret, you know. So was he influenced? Yes. But the way, you know, look at Harry Potter, for example, and the Sorcerer's Stone. That you're not going to find that anywhere, the type of writing that he has, the way he combines things. So, but yes, you hear elements. I think it's great that he is promoting that big symphonic sound. Where would we be? You know, there's a great YouTube video that has the final scene of the first round of Star Wars movies, the throne room, with no music. It just has dialogue and no music. It's hysterical. It's absolutely hysterical.
It's incredibly slow and wooden.
It's horrible, yes. And it just makes you realize how important the music is. But no, I have a great respect for John Williams for many reasons. He was a great conductor. He really challenged the orchestra. His music is written for professional orchestras. It's just as difficult. It's fiendishly difficult. And he also has made it available for any orchestra to purchase, which he is the only composer, living composer, who has made this possible. And so that you can buy Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Do you mean as opposed to rental?
As opposed to rental or not being able to get it in any way, shape, or form, which is often the case. I tried to do the theme from Captain America. You know, it would be great. You know, it was written for orchestra. Can't get it. No, not going to happen, which is really a shame because I think it's great to have live music, live symphonic music. So John Williams really has, it's his way of outreach. I mean, does he need the money? No, you know, but he's made it available and it's very affordable. And so that any orchestra can buy the music, which means you're going to perform it more often because small budget orchestras like ours, we can't afford, you know, always to be renting. And if we have something that we own, then we perform it again and again and again. And it's very well-written music. So it's exciting. It's interesting to me to put the Star Wars music right next to Don Juan because they're actually both very, very difficult in different ways.
Right, right. Well, that's a great answer, and I'm glad you elucidated on that.
Not that I have any opinions on the matter.
I would like to do a quick rehash for those who may have just tuned in that my guests here today are the conductor of the Battle Creek Symphony, Ann Harrigan, a director of programming for What Ado Theater, Terry Knoll, and Rachel Markley, who is a resident company actor with What Ado Theater. And the collaboration is a both acted and musically performed show that describes Richard Strauss's inspiration for the famous tone poem Don Juan. First half of the program will feature the company actors and a story.
Yes, the story of Don Juan, basically. I would be interested to hear what you know. This is a brand new piece, and so new script. Oh, what it'd be like for actors to have something handed to them 2 weeks before.
Well, it's definitely working at What Ado is a place where you can take scripts in 2 weeks and make something. We are used to making products very quickly. Most of our shows, musicals and shows in general, take about 5 to 6 weeks to put on. And we normally, most plays are put on within 4 to 5 weeks. We put stuff together pretty quickly. So taking a script and the length of the script was pretty easy to put together. I think our biggest challenge is actually breaking down the excerpts and understanding the history, because that's a big thing for actors, is we need to understand what we are portraying and knowing our – and Randy Wolf is very – particular about character history and knowing your characters and where they come from and the history of it. So it's actually sitting here and talking about all this. It's very enlightening to hear the back history and the backstory, so we can understand to portray the story, I guess, in a better light when we're performing. And so when you're taking a script, you have to take all that into consideration and then almost find a way to, I guess, get the audience to understand what you're saying, which you have to be careful about not over-exaggerating, but at the same time making sure that it's exaggerated enough for them to understand where you're coming from.
Let me ask Rachel if you understand your character and how she fits in with the piece.
Like Terry said, it's very helpful to hear the history, et cetera, to get a better understanding. What I was taught when I went through college, et cetera, was acting is living truthfully through imaginary circumstances. So you really do need to know the character, et cetera. So this extra information, as well as what we've been piling together, plus research on Don Juan I've done separately, individually, you merge it all together so you can really live and be in that moment to make it believable.
Mm-hmm.
So
what's your background, your training?
I went to Alma College for theater. I have a degree in that, so.
You have an amazing voice.
Oh, thank you.
You're like 2 feet away from the microphone, and it's coming through loud and clear.
Oh, yeah. I have a loud voice. I've been told.
So that's one of your assets, I think. And what else do you bring experience-wise?
Well, I pretty much left college and then went home for a year to make some money, and moved out here to Battle Creek because I had heard about What Ado from some friends at college that were working with it when it was just starting, and so I've pretty much been with What Ado ever since. And
have you had the opportunity to play a variety of
roles? Oh, I've been all over the board with roles at What Ado. I've played crazy old ladies with no teeth. I've played young children. I've played men on several occasions. So it's been a great opportunity, and I've got to also do behind the stage work as well as stage managed, helped out with lights. It's a great opportunity.
And who are you for this production?
I'm Pauline.
You are the beloved.
The beloved.
Pauline.
Yes. And it's so interesting. Pauline is such an interesting woman because she's a very strong woman, very strong and tempestuous. She's an opera singer. In fact, there is a very famous story in which they were rehearsing an opera. I don't think it was Don Giovanni, I don't remember, but they were rehearsing an opera, and Strauss was having problems with a tenor, I believe it was. It was a male singer, and he kept working with the singer. And Pauline got her nose bent out of shape because he wasn't working with her because she sounded great. But she wanted that same
attention.
Sort of attention.
Yeah.
So she took her vocal score and she threw it at his head to get his attention and hit the principal second, which is interesting how those things kind of go that way. Whenever I lose my baton, it always goes towards the second. So I don't know what it is about the second violins. They're kind of, you know, stuck in that spot. And the orchestra was mortified. Just mortified. And they said, "What are you going to do about that woman?" And he said, "I'm going to marry her." And he did. And this is 1889. Strauss died in 1949, and she died a few months later. And so what a relationship. So clearly she responded well to her strength and her passion.
She shows up in more than one piece.
Ein Heldenleben.
Yes, A Hero's Life.
Yes.
The whole violin solo, that's all mm-hmm. a depiction of Pauline.
Yes, definitely.
And there must be more. I mean, the way he wrote his operas.
Oh, yes. And, yes, he was definitely absolutely in love with her, and the oboe solo, which characterizes, her solo. And so what we have in our little script is you can see where Don Juan is, like everything that Strauss wrote, in a sense, an alter ego, so that he's not a romantic character, himself. He was, and so this is his way to be a romantic character and perhaps, woo Pauline, who this is early on the show that he has these passionate leanings. I mean, it was interesting. Anderson, I was like, is that really the way to impress a girl? I was like, well, maybe in the 1800s, you want to show that, you're a romantic guy. I mean, look at Berlioz. he wrote Symphonie Fantastique to get a girl, an actor. And so in this case, it was definitely a happier ending than with Berlioz. And so it's just interesting to see how he used the music to express how he felt, how he would like to be thought of, with the wonderful heroic passages. It's a lot of contrast. And one thing we should probably talk about is the opening, which is so famous.
Iconic, yes.
Iconic.
Almost Zarathustra iconic, but not, I don't, maybe almost as.
Well, for violins it is. You cannot get a job in any orchestra in the country without playing the opening because it is so difficult. It's fair to say that probably our first violin section has the entire first page memorized. And you have to play it. When you have an audition, you have to stand behind a screen and you have to play, and they'll just say go, and you have to play it, and you have to play it flawlessly or you will not make it even to the next round. They won't bother to hear you. So we do make some fun out of that because it is so absolutely brutally fast and difficult, and it's fun for the orchestra because they have been practicing this their entire adult lives. And you can't perform it as many times because the orchestra is huge. You're going to see quite a few more people on stage, and so it's expensive to put Don Juan on. And so the orchestras don't get to perform it as much as they'd like to. But it's fun for the orchestra to be able to perform something they've been working on, for so long.
What a wonderful piece to build a concert around.
Yes.
Let's hear the opening to Don Juan and see where it goes from there. My guests are Anne Harrigan, Terry Noel, and Rachel Markley. And the concert is tomorrow at 7:30 with a pre-concert information session. Is that at 6:30?
6:40.
Yep. 6:40. So. And Anders Dahlberg will be hosting that. And so here's Don Juan.
Thank you.
from Berlin Philharmonic Recording. We're listening to music from Don Juan, the tone poem by Richard Strauss. Was that the oboe solo that you...
That was the oboe solo. That's Pauline's solo. So very beautiful. It's written tender, very tender and expressively. Yeah, Strauss wrote specifically in the instructions.
Your inspiration here was this tone poem. You broke it down, right? And thought about the elements of it and how they can relate to the story of Strauss and this character, Don Juan.
Yes, and we even broke down some of the compositional aspects of it, because that's one of the things, it goes so fast. For most, you know, it's 18 minutes, it goes like lightning, and you can't catch it all. You know, it's as if, for example, if you were watching football and you didn't know what a first down was, or, you know, if you're watching a great baseball game and you didn't know the ins and outs about stealing bases. And so it happens so fast. So this is, I guess you'd call it instant replay, except the other way around. We're going to, you know, break it down beforehand so mm-hmm. that then when people hear it, things like, for example, Strauss's use of the glockenspiel, for which he was derided in reviews at the time in the 1800s.
Using a xylophone sounding
The glockenspiel, the bells, yeah. Yes, for color. He used it to have a brilliant sound for a ballroom sort of scene in which a chandelier sort of feel. And, you know, well, what's that? That's ridiculous. You know, but it's signature. And again, this is where we're talking about Williams, John Williams, using signature colors. And he uses this sort of mystical sound. He combines things like the celeste, the bells, you know, with the different tremolo effects in the strings, harps, and things like that. So that use of color and drama is something that Strauss was very good at as an orchestrator. So we're actually going to break things out so that the audience can hear what is it like if you don't have this, and then if you add it in. So you can really hear that one instrument in one measure makes a big difference, and that's how Strauss composed.
You know, this is hard to describe. What this entire project, this that you've dreamed up, is hard to get my mind around. We've been talking about it all hour, and I think I understand, but it's a little unwieldy. So maybe one more time, would you just go through the concert order and,
sure.
and say what's going to happen and how the actors are involved?
Well, we're going to start with the overture to Don Giovanni by Mozart, which of course is the Italian for Don Juan, and the second part of the first half, we're bringing on the What a Do actors, and we have written a play, is the best way to say it, that has musical excerpts in it and has acting. I'm in the play, the orchestra's in the play, the actor's in the play. Strauss is there, Don Juan is there, the three leading ladies, and his love of his life, Paulina Anna. And so it's short. It's about 20, 25 minutes, and the play is about Don Juan and writing it, and what it was like to write it, and what's it like to play it. You know, what was it like in the 1800s, 1888, you know, which is right about when the Battle Creek Symphony was started. 1899 was when the Battle Creek Symphony was founded. So this is just 10 years before the Battle Creek Symphony. So what was it like at that time to have a first shot at this amazing piece of music? And so the audience will have a chance to, you know, be entertained. It's very funny. It's very entertaining and still educational in terms of you get to hear all these things, then intermission. And then we come back and we play Don Juan so that now you can hear everything, you know, we've talked about in this play. And then on the last piece we're playing is the Jedi Stepson finale from Star Wars, The Force Awakens, which was just written 2 years ago.
Mm. Well, let's go around and hear final thoughts on tomorrow night's program. You're all anticipating an exciting program and hoping, I'm sure, that a lot of people will be in WK Kellogg Auditorium. Rachel?
Looking forward to this first-time collaboration. It's kind of the first thing we've ever done of its kind, and hoping we get a lot of interest and have a good time.
How about you, Terry?
I'm just very excited for the community and for us to collaborate on this piece. And even after talking for this hour, it's actually made me more excited to share this history and give some people kind of a lesson and just have a good time at a concert at the same time.
And finally, Anne.
Well, it's a one-of-a-kind thing. And so come on out. I'm excited to see people. I want to hear from people afterwards. write to us on Facebook or give us a call. Let us know what you think. You know, we're trying to do different things. That's something the Battle Creek Symphony is known for. And we're very excited to be collaborating with Whatadoo Theater, our professional partners, you know, in theater. And it's wonderful to have that talent in the community. So I think that the audience is going to have a fantastic time.
Once again, how do listeners find information?
More information, 269-963-1911. Talk to Patrick. He's there right now waiting for you to call. Talk to him this morning. Battlecreeksymphony.org. There's information there. Also information about Whatadoo Theater there. And the concert is at 7:30 on Saturday night with a pre-concert talk at 6:40.
Thank you, Anne, Terry, and Rachel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kara.
John Williams.